for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 294 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I have the chance to welcome back a longtime friend of mine, David Miller, who has always got good things to say about the industry, and every once in a while, he creates a comic himself, and that's what's going on right now. He's making the Frankenstein Zombie, which is being funded through Indiegogo. We talk about how Mary Shelley's original story was an inspiration for him, as well as who the characters are that surround Frankenstein in this book. We discuss why he chose Indiegogo over Kickstarter, and what kind of things we might expect to find in the upcoming issues. His Indiegogo is going to be concluding in the next couple of days, so be sure to go to that website and find the Frankenstein Zombie so you can support it and help make this great book a reality. He's got a lot of good things to talk about, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast David Miller, who was one of the people who helped me get started way back when I got going, and you did writer's block, several other good things, and now you've got a new book that you're getting ready to put out called The Frankenstein Zombie. How you doing, David?
Oh, great. Hey, Wayne, thanks for having me back, and I didn't realize that was the start. It's been so long. Now you're an old pro at it.
Yeah, well, gosh, it's been 6-7 years now, I think, since I've been doing this. So you helped me get started. You were somebody I could bounce off of for several episodes, which I really appreciated, about comic-related topics. So now you're back making comics. How great is that? Talk to me about the Frankenstein Zombie and where the... Well, let's start off with what the basic concept is, like the TV guide version of it is.
Oh, well, the log line would be the monster of Frankenstein becomes an unlikely ally in a human zombie war, and it's one difference in the Frankenstein legend, in that now there's these other things in the countryside, zombies, who are much more frightening than he is, and he's basically going through a crisis, identity crisis, because people are now, instead of throwing torches and pitchforks at him, are actually asking for his help.
That's kind of scary for him. He's not used to that.
Well, it I could see, like, trust is a hard thing, and like, do I really trust these humans, and will they stab me in the back? You know, things like that.
Now, as I understand it, this is set in 1825. Sorry, why set it back then? It's interesting because zombies, of course, are better known now. Why set it back in the early 1800s?
Well, that kind of goes into a plot point I'd rather not touch on, but okay. one of the other reasons is that that's when Mary Shelley invented it.
Okay.
And if I remember right, it's only like 50 years earlier, like 50 or 25 to 50 years earlier, where she set it. Mm-hmm. But she wrote it, and I also set it around like where she had the inspiration for it was around Gershon, Germany, or Gershheim. And so that's why it is set there too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is a question you would ask or going to ask, but what kind of started this is that actually I wanted to do a Bride of Frankenstein comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I did all this research and I did all this world building, you know, and I just had all this material prepped up for it. And then I walked into the comic shop and I said, oh, someone's done a Bride of Frankenstein comic book. So like, I have all this material, and I said, well, I'm just going to put it away. But it was just in the forefront of my thinking, because I really do love the classic legends in their classic forms.
Mm-hmm.
And just it kept coming. Anytime I'd run into something, it would just keep popping up. And this seemed like a good pitch. Just like I thought I had a good pitch for the Bride of Frankenstein, but it doesn't matter because someone beat me to it. So it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I think this is unique enough, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm going forward.
Now, I saw you out in San Diego Comic-Con this year, and you were passing out little ash cans of it, and you gave me a copy of it, which I really liked. There's a couple of questions I got, though, about it. The cover is color, but inside is black and white. Is that the way the book is going to be when you get to the full book?
Yes, it's going to be color cover, black and white, but I am putting some gray tones in that wasn't in that ash can. Mm-hmm. But the final will have gray tones to help make things pop. And so it has a little bit of a feel of
it. Okay. All right. Now, also, it's got a number one yo, it says on it. What's up with that? What's that all about?
Just me trying to be modern and mm-hmm. maybe the kids who are probably 30 now would dig that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just trying to be a little fun, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the initial part of the story. Clearly, you've got more to go. Is this going to be the first issue? Is this going to be part of the first issue? How's this going to work?
Well, that's only the first 12 pages. Mm-hmm. There's eight more. I'm doing an Indiegogo campaign. So by putting out the first 12 pages for preview, it's over half the book. So I'm thinking if that isn't enough for you to make your decision, I don't know what will be. Mm. But I think that should give everyone at least a feel for what you're buying if you buy it.
Now, I have to ask you something, because most people that are getting money for comics these days go through Kickstarter. Why did you choose Indiegogo?
Well, the thing is, like, let's say that, give a broad example, like, let's say I was asking for $20,000. Mm-hmm. If I get up to $18,000, which I'm not, by the way, asking that much, mm-hmm. if I get up to $18,000, I say, that's close enough, you know, I'll underwrite the rest, but if you do it for Kickstarter, if you get that close, it's not close enough, but with Indiegogo, I'm going with a flexible campaign so that even if it doesn't hit it, because of the wonderful new invention of on-demand printing, mm-hmm. I won't make any kind of like profit, but I would have enough just to fulfill whatever orders are there. Mm-hmm. And also, I've didn't think of this at the time, but I've since gone back and done updates that if you know, there's a donate button, like say if you want to, even if you don't want to buy the book, you donate a dollar or two. Anyone that even donates a dollar or two, I'll send them an ebook version.
Mm. Now, when does the campaign conclude? What day?
You know, that was the one thing I was going to check before I came on here. what's today? This is I think it's the 14th is when it will stop.
Okay, so so this will post the day before it concludes. Do you remember what time it's going to conclude?
It'll be at night. It'll be, you know, late at night.
So you'll have two days, basically. Once it posts, usually these podcasts come out about 11 in the morning on Major Spoilers, and that'll give you almost 2 days for people to kind of catch up and get in there and do it. Did you put a goal that you're aiming for in Indiegogo? I'm not all that familiar with that.
Yes, it's a $2,000 goal.
Okay.
I mean, technically, I guess I could have just made it anything because of on-demand printing, I can fulfill anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's kind of I'm still kind of going a creature of habit from working on Kickstarter, and like $2,000 would have been my Kickstarter goal, and I didn't really think of, it's really amazing. Like the more you do things, the more you learn. And the only way to become a good campaign runner is to run a campaign, you know, and now I'll look back and on the next one I do, and I'll say, okay, well, I'll make these changes and adjustments. But it's just, as you probably know, Wayne, it's just such a wide open, wild west thing on the internet, because what do? Do you go to Kickstarter? Do you go to Indiegogo? Do you do to Patreon? Do you do GoFundMe? You know, and which is the one that sounds least like organized begging?
Mm-hmm.
So
now, I have to ask you, as far as, because you've done Kickstarter, based on what I hear you saying, and they always say that Kickstarter is like a daily heart attack, and you go out there and you're constantly refreshing, why won't somebody donate? Why won't somebody donate? Especially on the weekends. Weekends are like death valley as far as like Kickstarters go, and they're always worried about that. Is Indiegogo a little easier as far as that goes? I mean, is less pressure on you?
The only thing that I would even quote unquote call pressure is that they said, you know, you really should do at least two updates on your campaign. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, I had done at least that many, except I was new to the interface and I was doing it wrong. Mm. And so I just copied everything I had done and then used the official update button so it could hit their metrics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had done like four or five updates. It's just, I didn't use the update button to do it. So they were thinking, man, you're not really doing much on your campaign. So again, the learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Have you done Indiegogo before? Is this your first one?
I think I've done one, and I can't, and it was so long ago, I'd have to go back to my account and see what my other thing was. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, I have tried Kickstarter, I've tried Indiegogo, I've tried approaching people with money mm-hmm. to be investors. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Gosh, this is something else. I did I actually sold an idea to for a reality TV show to a production company, and we came very close to selling it. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd remember that we could have had a nice conversation at Comic-Con about that. Mm-hmm. But that's a question for another day. But through those people, you know, I approach them about, okay, this project didn't work, but I've got these comic book projects, and you know, with money, all things are possible. You just and whether you find that money through investors or, you know, Kickstarter or Indiegogo or GoFundMe, it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And it's called The Frankenstein Zombie. And I have to say that the way that you portray Frankenstein is real interesting. He's almost, you know, Frankenstein, normally we see he grows around and rawr, kind of stuff. And this Frankenstein has actually got a real sense of humor. In fact, on the cover, it looks like he's talking to a bride of Frankenstein, interestingly enough. And he says, "So new in town."
Yeah, he's talking to a zombie, and actually that's kind of like a French, like Marie Antoinette wig.
Oh.
That's what that's supposed to be anyway.
Okay. And he gives several comedic things and even laughs a time or two. Which, you know, I'm not used to seeing Frankenstein laugh very often.
Well, that's what I mean by going back to the basics of the foundations of these legends. Mm-hmm. Everyone's understanding of the Frankenstein monster is the Boris Karloff, mm-hmm. basically the model for the Hulk, almost, for the, you know, the monosyllabic Hulk. Mm-hmm. But if you go read the novel, the Mary Shelley novel, yeah, when he's first created, his mind's basically in shock. Mm-hmm. But after the shock wears off, his intellect comes back, mm-hmm. and he is not just a rampant beast. He's actually a very crafty, cunning serial killer. Mm. And so if you want to know what his voice sounds like when I'm writing his dialogue, mm-hmm. on The Simpsons, there's this redheaded thug mm-hmm. that like steals cars. He goes like, "Oh, cops." I don't know if you remember him. That's mm-hmm. that's how I envisioned him talking. Like, "Oh, no, not this." And also it's like he's very separated from humanity. So when people are getting killed and ripped apart in front of him, but he himself is not being threatened himself, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, please, I don't want to get involved. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what he says one time. A young girl goes up and asks him for help, and his response is basically what you said, that I really don't like to get involved, which is kind of interesting because, you know, I've read a lot of versions of Frankenstein. I think there was like a Grant Morrison version in the comics mm-hmm. that was kind of along these lines. He was sort of dry humor as far as those things go, but he wasn't quite as, you have him actually being funny and actually laughing. I don't remember ever seeing that version of Frankenstein, or really many of them, laugh.
Yes.
So I think that's something that people are going to be really, you know, surprised by, because you're right, we're so used to the Boris Karloff and all those good things. But it's really a fascinating book, and you're getting off to the kick. You get off with a good start. The thing I'm curious about is this like a mini series? How are you going to tell this story?
Well, let's say limited series, because it's not four issues. It could easily be up to a full year. I'm not quite certain, but definitely up to eight issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because after I only have time to develop what's in front of me, and I know what's going to come after it, but I don't know quite how long that's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I'm really enjoying doing this story.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the reasons I know I'm going to finish issue two is there's this joke the Frankenstein monster says in issue two that I just have to do it because I want that joke told. I just love it. Mm-hmm. So that's what's shoving me forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good because, you know, as you probably know from talking to a lot of independent comic people,
mm-hmm.
they're not making a lot of money, and mm-hmm. it's really just the love of the project or love of the art form that keeps them producing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two ideas that I wanted to do, and one was the Frankenstein monster, and I just kind of almost flipped a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it fell on this one, because I'm just enjoying it, and that's what's keeping me going.
Mm-hmm. So when do you expect to have the first issue complete?
Oh, it was completed before I even started the Indiegogo campaign. I mean, there's a lot to this actually, in that, you know, I've tried doing comics every way you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this one time I just said, look, I'm going to sit down. I don't care if it takes me 4 weeks. I don't care if it takes me 2 months. I don't care if it takes me a year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take as long as it takes for it to look the way I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noodled on it for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then announced it. So everyone looks like, wow, you did this fast. No, it took me 6 months. I never talked to anyone about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like I'm just swinging it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been finished for quite some time, really. I mean, well, at least a month. And I'm working on it. Yeah, and I'm working on issue two now.
Right, okay. I mean, you're talking about four within a year, so maybe quarterly is how you're going to put it out?
I'm hoping the second one goes out a lot faster,
mm-hmm.
but you know, as you understand the comics industry just as well as I do, and
mm-hmm.
it may be that I'm just going to sit on it, and I may just put it all together and just offer the trade paperback, on my direct, you know, on my, on-demand, printing service.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than, nickel and dime people, I don't know. It's really hard to figure out what works in the brick and mortar industry right now,
mm-hmm.
as I'm sure you understand.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm not certain anymore, because, you know, I remember the days of Future Comics. I don't know if you remember that
mm-hmm.
Dick Giordano and other people all got together and said, what we're going to do is we're going to make trades, and we're going to make them available to like Borders and those kinds of stores. And it didn't go over very well. And yet now I see people going back to that. Instead of doing individual issues, they're going to trades and things like that. I'm still not certain if it's something we're not familiar with, if people want to plunk down a lot of money for it. It's going to depend on you know, you develop a following, I think, with social media and good things like that. And maybe go to some conventions and things like that. Because I don't know if, maybe I mentioned to you, I'm helping out with an independent comic. Well, it's not anymore. It's been picked up by a comic company. It's called Stabbity Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is been picked up by Scout Comics. And they haven't released the first one yet, but like Rick has gotten like five or six of the issues self-published. And so what they're going to do is they're going to publish them from Scout, and things are going to go from there. He's got a whole long story lined out. Rick does. Rick Rivera is the guy who's behind it all. And I imagine it's like you've got things you talked about, the one thing you wanted to make sure happened. There are probably several other things that you'd like to have happen as well, because of your affection for the Frankenstein and the mashup with the zombie business. It's going to go where people haven't seen these two genres go. So that gives you a chance to do something creative and different, which I think, knowing you probably really like doing that kind of thing.
I do, but and you know, you've touched on a lot of things, so I just want to quickly respond. Mm-hmm. The Future Comics thing, which you said was absolutely, there's nothing wrong with what you said. Mm-hmm. However, they were trying to sell a trade on something no one had heard of. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of their all their titles were so original and hadn't had what I call a floppy life mm-hmm. yet. And maybe I'm taking an easier route here, but everyone knows Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So that actually gives me a leg up. Mm-hmm. And the trade industry is a lot different than it was when Future was doing it, mm-hmm. although Wizard wasn't that far away. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to be giving a lot more content. If I'm going to go, if I'm going with like a 100-page graphic novel, mm-hmm. I'm probably going to be giving a lot more content free online. Mm-hmm. To interest the readers, mm-hmm. like maybe almost like 50% of it free. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, if you want the rest, here's the trade paperback or the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And as we both know, we only have so much time. Mm-hmm. And there's actually another one I'd really love to work on, but I only have time to do one well, and I'm doing this one. Mm-hmm. And we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is do it the best you can with something, and then if this goes over real big, and say, from the creator of the Frankenstein zombie, the next thing, and you can do those kinds of things, that you build on the success that you've had, which is good, and stuff like that. Because, you know, you've done lots of good comics projects in the past. I mentioned Writer's Block, which I always liked, where you wrote you drew the story, and then you gave it to writers to come up with the dialogue and the story in that sense. And my favorite one was Mark Waid did one, and I thought they did a beautiful job on that. But that's a creative thing, too. I mean, I have never seen anybody do anything even close to that. So I like that.
Well, thank you. But again, that's the problem with, creating, and if you're not careful, and you're in a niche thing, it sounds like being a sellout. But sometimes you do have to do a more mass market thing mm-hmm. to get the machine rolling. Mm-hmm. And I like being creative, and I like counter programming. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's not enough people in the counter programming to buy the book or or watch the TV show or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the sad thing is that. Some of the most creative stuff I've read are like indie comics, which goes away I'm not expecting. And that's why I spend a lot of my time on these podcasts and then reviews and stuff and columns that I write, talking about what I consider hidden gems that people, if they knew about them, would really be interested in them. And that's kind of what I feel like your book is a book that I think people, particularly those people who are interested in horror or interested in Frankenstein, specifically would find this a unique read. From all the things they read before. And I think that's something that, honestly, that's a real accomplishment, if you can do that.
Thank you. Thank you. But I think I'm not the only one. I mean, Universal wants to bring back their horror properties, and certainly one of them is going to be Frankenstein. I mean, when we had Penny Dreadful, you bet he was there. I mean, they had the Frankenstein monster in that. Mm-hmm. And I am not the first person to do something with the Frankenstein monster. You mentioned, you know, Grant Morrison's love of it. Mm-hmm. Mark Weekly did the Frankenstein mobster, which I thought was a very clever series. Mm-hmm. In Mystery Men, they had Casanova Frankenstein, which again, just, and right now, Dark Horse is coming out with their Sherlock Frankenstein mm-hmm. and the League of Evil thing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm in good company, and I'm just hoping that people will like what I'm doing. And we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to be out in... I keep thinking of things that I forgot to ask. Is this going to be out through Diamond? How are you going to get this out? Because I know you've got a website, but is that up and going yet?
My Facebook... The Facebook page is working as the website right now.
Okay.
But really, right now, I was... shouldn't say this, but I was seeing if I could sidestep Diamond and just do, you know, soliciting through the Indiegogo campaign and mm-hmm. fulfilling through the Indiegogo campaign. Mm-hmm. It is a journey figuring out what's the best way. And thing is, though, if I get at least three issues worth, I think someone like Diamond would be more open to listening because they'll see, okay, this isn't just a flash in the pan. They can see the story and see all the artwork.
Because there's like companies like Kablam, and there's other places, and of course Amazon, or I think there's an Amazon part that will do those kinds of things. I mean, if you can hook into one of those and make those kind of things available to people and kind of catch on, because there's like, for example, there's Jay Farber just came out with a comic that's based on Amelia Earhart, which I always find, which is funny, and then, you know, that kind of thing. Anybody who's interested in that character, the historical person, is going to be interested in what he's doing with that story. And I kind of think the same thing with Frankenstein and zombies. Of course, zombies are really big, Walking Dead and all that good stuff. But I think that this kind of thing is something that I think that you're going to need to do is get the word out. How are you going to, that's why I think, like I said, social media, I don't know how you're going to have to work at getting the word out, I think, pretty hard.
Yeah, I've been doing that through Facebook and people like you and asking people to share on their social media. And but it's also knowing what is the hot social media. And I think right now Instagram is, at least for the kids, I think they say the older people stay on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a journey. I don't really know the plan on that. It's going to be throwing things against the wall and see what works and mm-hmm. just not giving up. And since I'm still going to be working on this thing, I'll have issue two to try my new ideas on marketing, you know, mm-hmm. things keep going. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I might just start giving it away like Steve Connolly does because people see it and they like it. And you sometimes you just have to generate the following without revenue first. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get back to the book and talk a little bit about the fact that you've got supporting characters with Frankenstein. We talked about the little girl, but there's a guy by the name of Gustav that he runs into, too, who he actually considers to be a really creative or humorous individual. He's the one that actually makes Frankenstein laugh by saying something. Talk about, is Gustav based on somewhere in the Frankenstein lore, or is this a new character you came up with?
No, actually, it's a new character, or original, I would say. Mm-hmm. And basically, the reason Frankenstein has such a positive reaction to him is that all his encounters with humanity has been based in fear and ignorance. Like, no one gives him a second chance. No one, you know, no one does anything but screams and points at him. Mm-hmm. And here we have this person who's clearly the everyman, who's, you know, who's this close to being killed by a zombie, and yet he cracked a joke, mm-hmm. you know, rather than, you know, just screaming, "Oh, another monster!" You know, he talks to him, and that takes Frankenstein by surprise. Mm-hmm. And going back to like all the research I did on this, you'll notice at one point he asks him his name, asks the monster his name, mm-hmm. and he says, "You can call me Adam." You could just say, "Oh, I'm doing like a, you know, first person, you know, or Adam Warlock type thing." Mm-hmm. No, in the novel, he says, the monster says to Victor Frankenstein, "I'm the Adam of your labors." Mm. So he's already called himself that once. Mm. So that's what I mean about all the research I did on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a biblical reference to the first man and the first woman, Adam and Eve.
Right.
So that's pretty good. You're right in the sense that Frankenstein is a lot smarter than people give him credit for or would like to portray him as, you know, based on that kind of a thing. I mean, that's pretty knowledgeable of biblical stuff and all that. So that's different.
Well, he read War and Peace. The monster read War and Peace in the Frankenstein novel. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the three. No, it wasn't. It was Paradise Lost, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a mixed. He read Paradise Lost. How can, you know, that was one of the three books he read. Mm-hmm. And like, how can he not be intelligent if he read that whole thing? You know? Mm-hmm.
So. Really? That's a long book. That takes a while to get through, so that's pretty good. Now, one other little coloring thing from the cover. It looks like Frankenstein's skin is kind of bluish.
Actually, yeah, I pushed that because, you know, we do things kind of from our fanish origins, right? Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, the Marvel Comics Frankenstein was basically a pasty white guy with the blue shadows. Like, if there was, you know, light turning away from the form, it was like a blue shadow. Mm-hmm. And Arcia Rosegar, my colorist, I told him that that's where I want to go, but he's in like a nighttime thing. So he's kind of all in shadow. So the blue kind of took over there. And I said, I want the, I want the Frankenstein monster to be like pasty face white with, you know, is, you know, the darker parts of his body would be kind of blue. And the, and I want the zombies to be a yellow pallid. So they separate each other. So you know which one's which.
Now, I've got to ask you something else, too, about the fact that, like, Walking Dead, they don't call them zombies because it's like a trademark, I think, by somebody. You haven't run into that problem yourself, have you?
No, and if it was, I'm sure it would be, like, a very specific use of it. You know, Frank, and I don't call them zombies on the inside because no one just thinks to say that. It's almost like a satirical thing, but I have not run into any. No one has approached me yet.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's good because they call them walkers in there to avoid that kind of problem. But you know, I see other people use zombies in their titles. Zombie Queen is a comic and all that stuff, and nobody seems they seem to be able to go on without getting a lot of lawsuit entanglement, so I don't know why you couldn't.
Right.
So that's really interesting. So that, so now, all right, we've got the first issue. You've got pretty much together.
You're getting ready. Oh, it's finished.
Yeah, so
it's finished.
So you're ready to start getting that printed. And then issue two, you said it will be out before too long. Three and four is coming. And as we talked a little bit about the fact that you probably got other things in mind after the first four issues. If, now, given that this is a success and you make good money enough to be able to continue on, do you have stories in mind after the first four issues?
Oh, yes. Like I said, it could very well be up to 12 months. I know at least about eight. It's just after the first six, you know, I haven't been able to – I know the storyline. I know what's going to happen. Haven't had a chance to, you know, plot it out. But anywhere between – it's going to be anywhere between 8 to 12 issues. I'm hoping – hopefully up to 12.
That'd
it's just – every time I think I've come to the last, you know, story for him, I think, you know, with this particular monster with a – if not sense of humor, at least sense of irony, I just think, what about if he did this? How would he react here? And it just becomes very attractive, and I can't drop it. I can't stop thinking about it. So, okay, well, I'll do that story, too, when it's when it comes along.
Well, I got to ask, because you mentioned this character before, somewhere in your in Frankenstein's travels, are we going to see the Bride of Frankenstein, maybe?
That's always possible, although she'll never headline now because I just feel like someone else beat me to it. I mean, I had so much material, you know, planned out for that. So, but I think there's going to be a lot and revealed in an interesting way because, again, everyone's basing it on the movies, you know? And if you go back to the original novels, it's going to be all totally legitimate, yet all totally unfamiliar, because I'm going to the core source material, and that's how I really love my monsters. I mean, I hate that werewolves these days can speak and sometimes aren't even furry, you know, that they have their minds. To me, they should be killing ravenous monsters. I don't like that the vampires are sparkly and can spend so much time in the daylight. It's, you know, the basis of the legends to me are good enough.
Because it's like the vampires now are all young and teenager and all that kind of stuff and, you know, sexually oriented kind of things. And I don't remember reading any of that when I read Dracula. I mean, there was things that he could do to influence people, but not the fact that he could, you know, all this craziness that goes on in the Twilight movies and all that stuff. I'd rather see a more closely aligned to the original concept of what Dracula was.
Right, and all this emo stuff, like, no one wants to have a vampire that acts like a teenager. you want them sophisticated or at least aged.
Although I have to say, there are a lot of teenagers that are monsters. I'm sorry to, and I know a few parents who have them, so they would agree with me on that one.
Ooh, that's totally perceptive of you, although a little scary.
Yeah, I talked with Jay Ferber not long ago, and he was doing a show in which alien teenagers came. And I said to him, I said, how do you tell the difference between an alien teenager and a human teenager? And he started to laugh. Well, I said, you know, maybe you can't tell the difference between them. So I kind of like that whole notion of teenagers and monsters and stuff like that. So it's good. So, okay, so why don't we go ahead and let's give people information again on how to support a Frankenstein zombie. It's Indiegogo, and how do you find it on Indiegogo?
You could probably do a quick Google search for Frankenstein zombie and Indiegogo, but the they gave me a abbreviated website for it, and it's igg.me/@ the Frankenstein zombie. So that, and I maybe you could post that on your blog, because I actually sent it to you.
Okay.
With our last one of our earlier exchanges. I just want to say, from an artistic standpoint, the two big things I run into problems drawing this thing is that one, it's like a cast of thousands. You have to create all these characters that you really use only once, because they're they get killed and eaten, by zombies and stuff. And two, when I did my research on 19th century German people, they look amazingly contemporary to 21st century Americans. And I'm like, if I draw this person just like it looks in this photo, people are going to say, why are you putting all these modern people in this period piece? And so I'm always having to like put mutton chops or wax on the mustaches or monocles or, bow ties instead of neckties to make it to turn them into period people. So that's been really a difficult part of visualizing it.
Isn't that odd? Because you wouldn't expect that, almost two centuries difference. And you think that we're used to Victorian people, and you talked about the hairdo on the one lady and all these things. We expect a lot of difference, and yet to find out that these are actually quite similar after even within less than 200 years apart, that's kind of surprising.
It is. I think a lot of it has to do with they didn't use blow dryers, and we came up through a time where a blow dryer was always used, and now we've kind of gotten away from it. Lots of like gel and just shortcut crop cuts and stuff, and suddenly they just look amazingly contemporary.
Wow. I wonder speaking of which, does Frankenstein have a contemporary haircut?
Well, it was my way of trying to make him. I always tried to figure out how to make him look as monstrous as possible. And for better or worse, people, that are bald on top is like it's not as desirable as having a full head of hair, and like those kind of subconscious, clues or triggers that I put in there. So yeah, and really he looks like Peter Boyle from young Frankenstein. He had the exact same look. And plus, so that, and then like the rotted nose part, which was very big in the rites in Frankenstein. It's like taking all these clues and all these influences and putting in a Cuisinart and just seeing what comes out.
Very cool. Well, it looks great. And as
thanks.
We said before, that's going to be concluding on the evening of the 14th, Monday. So if you have not done so before you listen to this podcast, be sure to get out there and find this on Indiegogo and support it. And I think that you'll really enjoy it. It's got a very different take on it than like we've been talking about, than we're kind of used to with Frankenstein. So I'm always looking for something like that, especially something that harkens back to the original, which is what you're doing. And I think that's always a great thing. So I think that's a great idea.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Now, anything else that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Well, I do have my my children's book up on Amazon right now. It's The Headless Sister. It's about a sister who's this little girl who's jealous of her sister because she thinks she gets all the attention because she has no head. It's kind of like a spin on kind of like the Munsters almost, or Adam's Family. I mean, but she's the only weird thing in the book. So, if you do, go to Amazon and do a search for David Miller, the Headless Sister, you can see that and see preview pages of that.
Cool.
I'm quite proud of that. Again, that's another one where I took the time and it looked exactly how I wanted it to look.
So, is Writer's Block still available, or is that kind of out of print right now?
Well, actually, I have that on my Amazon store, and if you go to Amazon and do a search for it, my name, you can order a copy, and it's got it has the works of Jim Shooter, Mike Baron, Roy Thomas, Mark Waid, Joe Duffy, Peter David, Gail Simone, Fabian DeCiza. It's 9. What is the last one? And Roger Stern. Roger Stern. All of them taking shots at some of the same visuals, mm-hmm. and with some feedback from them on their thought processes during it.
Well, I love that book too, so I highly recommend that book as well. So, Writer's Block, if you want something different that came at it a little differently from the artwork and then got to the script and the dialogue, you find there's a lot of humor involved in that stuff. Particularly Mark Waid does this wonderful bit that I just love. And I don't want to spoil any of it because it's really funny if you get a chance to read it. So, well, David, much success with this. I think The Frankenstein Zombie is going to be a great read for people. And all your other good things, I think, are definitely worth following up and getting a hold of. And I want to see more of your good stuff in the future, so please keep it up.
Oh, I am. Like I said, it's no longer a monetary goal. It's just this story just keeps pushing me, and I just can't drop it. So, yep, and you'll see a lot of it online for free, I'm sure, and just keep looking toward this horizon.
All right, terrific.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.